Good evening and welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. It's coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I'm Douglas Impuga. And
this evening we'll talk about political events in Africa in 2017. And with us tonight is my colleague, Vincent Macquarie, host of VOA's Africa 54. Vincent, welcome to the show and Happy New Year.
It's a pleasure. Thank you very much. Wishing you all the best also in this year.
You're welcome. And joining us from Durban, South Africa, is regular panelist Suleiman Mugula. He's an independent political analyst. Good evening, Suleiman.
Good evening, Douglas, and our listeners.
Thank you very much for joining us again.
Thank you very much, and Happy New Year to everybody.
Thank you. Now, as I said, our topic is looking at what happened in 2017 in Africa. Now, I don't know where to start. Let's start with the January of 2017. Long-serving leader Yahya Jammeh of the Gambia is marched out of town. Wow. Suleiman, what's your comment on that one?
A very big welcome. I think the best way to judge it is the response of the population. Because we have been cheated on the continent by these leaders always claiming that they overstay in power because they are loved by the people. But what is shocking is that after their departure, the way the people celebrate saw the exact opposite, which means that it is true they manipulated the system, they manipulated, they used the incumbents, all the facilities which they had to suffocate the people. Otherwise, the people of Africa, the people of Gambia showed that they needed change, and the going of Yahya Jammeh was a relief to the people, as shown in the celebrations which they had.
I see. Vincent, despite the guy being run out of town, it was comical. You know, he first conceded, then unconceded, and then was the pressure of the ECOWAS that actually drove him out.
Exactly. I mean, it shows you how drunk people become with power, that even when it is very, very clear that your people don't want you anymore, they have this, they live in this illusion that, you know, they're the best thing that ever happened to that country. In fact, remember, he believed that it was chosen by God, that he was there somehow. As an anointed of God to continue ruling that country. And it kind of tells you a lot about how twisted the minds of dictators become. They get to a point where they basically think they're demigods, and they live in a bubble. Possibly they listen to certain people around them who massage their egos and keep convincing them that there's nobody else in that country who could ever possibly rule the country other than themselves. But I think it was a wake-up call, not only to Mr. Jammeh, but also others across the continent, that regardless of what you think, regardless of how long you've stayed, a time comes when people say enough is enough. And I think sometimes even other institutions, including ECOWAS and others, realize that you're a burden and will run you out of town.
I see. Suleiman, closer to you there, there was a headline change in Angola in 2017, given that former President José Eduardo Santos had spent 38 years in power. But him, at least, he seemed to have read the sign of the times, although albeit a little bit late.
Before I go to that one, I wanted to conclude on that part of Gambia. I wanted to insert in something that we have to appreciate the good winds of good leadership that are blowing from West Africa. And we have to appreciate also the fact that the reforms, the change of government in Nigeria, the West African region seems to have stabilized. If you look at the region now, it is moving towards better government, especially the coming in of Nigeria. Nigeria stabilizing seems to be on course, followed by Ghana and Senegal. I think that region is becoming a little bit better, though they still have problems with Togo and Cameroon. But compared to other regions, I think they are doing very well, and we should appreciate that one. For our friends in Angola, the same thing like in Gambia. This gentleman has been the long-serving leadership. He thought he would stay there until death, but time has come. He ran out of time, and thank God people are celebrating, though it is within the same political party, but the Angolan people are beginning to see changes. For example, the families being touched, the things are moving fast. The government has given notice to people to return the money which they have ferried out of the country. So at least there is some change which is going to happen, and we have to welcome what happened, and we hope that people of Angola will start from the start and start in getting their country from the start.
Vincent, do you agree? Because it seems that given that the Dos Santos spent 38 years in power, he made the state like a family estate.
He did.
And how difficult is it to untangle that?
You know, it is tough. And remember, he remained the head of the ruling party.
Correct.
Which meant that he was still going to be more like the spiritual leader of the country.
Yes.
But I think given that we could witness a few changes soon after, remember the daughter...
Yeah.
Had to be
fired
from her position. Although he may be in the position where he is now as the leader of the party, he does not have the kind of clout that he has been holding over that country. And progressively, I think the current president will see wisdom in chipping away the influence of that family and doing the kind of grip that Mr. Dos Santos had on the country. I think we've seen signs of that. And you know what? I don't think he's necessarily going to be beholden to Mr. Dos Santos. Once you're in that position, when you're president, you realize you have a lot of power. Mm. In fact, it might remind us of Mwanawasa in Zambia and Chiluba, where, of course, Chiluba thought, going to make sure I pave way for my friend. But once the guy came in, he decided to become his own man because as president, you have the power. But of course, the new leader in Angola will take time because there's a military aspect. There is, of course, even within the civil service, it is a process. And he hopefully, I think I'm seeing signs of him undoing that system.
You see, that's the problem ingrained in some of these long-serving leaders in Africa. Is that what you mentioned, the military element in it? Santos, it's the party was merged with the state. And then it's controlled by one part, by one man or one family or a clique of elites. This has happened in most of these so-called liberation movements or whatever they are, which moves us to the gigantic events in Zimbabwe, Suleiman, where the oldest president in the world had to be overthrown in a coup that they maintained was never a coup. Mugabe, did he want to die in office?
Definitely, I think what we have to observe is that, unfortunately, many of these leadership who are born in the 19th century, they have been overtaken by time. They have not realized that things have changed with the globalization and the universalization of education. People now are more informed, people are more educated, citizens with the communication system changing. People now demand good leadership. They demand good governance. It is no longer the king-like leadership which existed in the 19th and 20th century. Now we are in the 21st century. The countries, the citizens of every country on the continent, they expect a leader to operate as a chief executive, a CEO, a modern CEO who commands, who controls, who makes policies that leads to the improvement of lives of the people. These people, the old people like Mr. Mugabe, they still have a belief. They are stuck in the past. They think a leader, a president, because he's the commander-in-chief, he's the overall leader. Whatever he says, what has to be done, it cannot be checked. The masses are demanding different. They want economic change. They want improvement in their lives.
Suleiman, I think it is more about actually the people awakening to wanting a different type of leadership. It's not about age, actually. I've come to kind of disagree with the notion that is about age, because if age was an issue, how old is Joseph Kabila? He's a young man. But he is using the same template that Museveni is using, that perhaps Mugabe was using. I think what is the biggest cancer of the continent of Africa is what political power gives you access to. It is the wealth, the power, and very corruptible kind of power. And because of that greed for wanting more and more, and how easily it comes to you once you're president, many of them realize that they really don't need to run their country like a CEO of a profitable corporation, because they become more concerned about themselves, what they're getting out of the system. And this becomes obsessive. In fact, many of them, are stupid not to know that, this is how governments ideally should be run. They know. But I think selfishness, self-centeredness, and greed for power and for wealth becomes the major determining factor on how they conduct themselves.
But then on that point, further to that point, let's stick with the case of Zimbabwe, whereby it was a palace coup where you remove only the top. Mnangagwa was hand in glove with Mugabe. They are both accused of some atrocities together. He's been in the system. Will things really change? Because if you remove only Mugabe and replace him with Mnangagwa, what actually changes? The system is the same. End of your.
Problem.
Go first, Suleiman.
The problem now, as I've said, there is globalization. There is pressure from the people. People are more enlightened. The way my brother has said, now people demand better leadership. What they are looking at is the product you are producing. If you can give good leadership, they will be able to tolerate you. If you cannot move the times and provide leadership which is required by the people, they will go back on the street. Any change is good. What matters, what Mnangagwa will provide for the people. The economy had collapsed. The rights of the people are trampled on every day. So if he can improve on the essentials which are required for the nation to move forward, then he'll be tolerated. But if he goes into the footsteps and he follows the same policies which Mr. Mugabe was following, there will be an unrest, there will be restlessness, and he will not be able to make it.
And you know, one thing they may inadvertently done is to take, as I mentioned it before, it's like to take the people of Zimbabwe up to the mountaintop and show them the other side, that it's possible. Many in Zimbabwe could never have imagined seeing Mr. Mugabe leave office in that way. They expected him to become the late president, not the former president. But what Mnangagwa and the military did, probably without realizing, is that they gave people the possibilities that exist in Zimbabwe. And you saw young people, educated, unemployed university graduates on the streets, and they have put their hopes in this leadership. They don't care that these people had been around Mugabe, but the people, the leadership has promised.
Yes.
And they're going to demand that those leaders in power today meet those meet their demands. And if they don't, they have told them, you can actually go to the streets and you can make your demands.
I see. Well, for those just, hold on, Suleiman. For those, let me just re-edit the program for us just joining us. You're listening to Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you live from VOA Studios here in Washington. Tonight, we're looking at the political events in Africa in the year 2017. Our panelists are my colleague, Vincent Makori, and Suleiman Mugula, South African best independent political analyst. And I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Studio 6. Finish your thought, Suleiman, then we can move on.
What I wanted to add in was to add what my brother said, is that what is so interesting is that what is so comforting is that the differences are so obvious. For countries which are democratic, the dividends are clear. I mean, you have got Zimbabwe with a collapsed economy, with a leader who has overstayed, with the policies who have been overrun by time, and then the economy is on the ground, people are suffering, graduates are unemployed. You have got a South Africa with a democracy, with the institutions running. You have got a Botswana with institutions running, with the people, I think, fairly well. You have got Ghana with a good governance, with the people hopeful, not hopeless.
Mm-hmm.
So that is what is helping. So you compare the good ones, you have got Senegal promising, you have got Ghana promising, you have got Nigeria promising. But when you look at Cameroon, when you look at Togo, all those ones, there is hopelessness in the other side, there is hope on the other side. So is this side. So when you look at Botswana, when you look at South Africa, you can see hope coming. So that is what will also put pressure from the citizens themselves. They will keep these people on the tenterhook.
I see. Now, there is this, there was the, in that, in 2017 or something emerged where African strongmen devised the means of inbuilt tenure. Say you rule 7 years, change the constitution, it gives 7 years, then an extra five, which makes it 17 years. Kagame did it. Museveni, towards the end of the year, bulldozed parliament to amend the constitution and allow him almost unlimited tenure.
Yeah.
Have we seen this trick is happening among the... It happened in Rwanda, it has happened in Uganda. Burundi wants to do the same. Kabila is still in a fix, but maybe he may follow suit.
Yes. And you know, this is a very sad development because it tells you one thing, that sometimes we can think that we are done with the past. And then the past comes back again to knock the doors on us. What these gentlemen, should I call them gentlemen, these fellows have done is to now try to use so-called constitutionalism to legitimize overstaying in power. Because it used to be that you'd literally just stay in power. Mm. That's what Mr. Daniel Arap Moi did in Kenya for years and years, whereby the constitution just made it, you know, indefinite. But now they're trying to change the constitution and make it look like, you know, it's a democracy. We have a parliament. It has changed some rules. And I'm not going to stay in power forever. We're just changing it so that I can stay for some time and then get out. But inevitably, what Museveni is doing is to plot to stay in power until he's 90 years old.
Yes.
And then he can leave when he just feels like he's extremely tired.
Or that's maybe he can live in a
in a coffin. Who knows?
Yeah.
So that is a very crafty way of bringing back something that we thought we had done with one-party states,
life presidency.
That is exactly what they're trying to bring back through the back door, where a country like in Rwanda, kids who are born today, they are also almost getting married, and they see the same president, Museveni, in Uganda. People are born, they have children.
They have children, yeah.
And they know the only person they have known is Museveni.
Suleiman?
For me, I feel, on the other hand, that it is a bit of a blessing that they are doing these things, because for a long time, their benevolence has cheated the world and some of the citizens. Now that they are doing them openly, I think it is a very good ticket for them to decampaign themselves very well, because it is obvious times have changed, but they have failed to realize that times have changed. They can do whatever they can do. They can name themselves life presidents, but the population is demanding the opposite. It is an opportunity for the young people in these countries to mobilize themselves, to organize themselves, and to throw away these regimes. Because these regimes are decadent. Where we are in the 21st century, we cannot have someone like Museveni to stay in power for over 30 years. People like Kagame. Look at that region. The whole region is rotten. The whole region is restless. There is no country. Come from southern Sudan. It is restlessness. Burundi, restlessness. DRC, restlessness. Uganda, restlessness. Rwanda, restlessness. Central African Republic, restlessness. So the people have now to rise up and demand better leadership.
I see.
Because the whole region is just gone. And they are a burden to everybody.
I see. Suleiman, talking of the region, we can't wind this discussion without mentioning what happened in Kenya. For the first time, the Supreme Court nullified an election. Then the opposition boycotted the rerun. And then the incumbents bulldozed through and won by a terrible margin.
Yeah.
So recent, the Kenyan experience is a bit tricky.
You know, Kenyan experience is very, 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 very tricky, as you say. It's been up and down.
Yeah.
But I think one thing Kenyans experienced, and I think the continent got to see, is what constitutions and strong constitutions could do and institutions could do. Kenya's, what happened in Kenya was trying to see how the constitution works. For the first time, the Supreme Court was able to actually use the independence that it has been provided by the constitution and nullified a presidential election that has it has never happened. So when that happened, we saw the reaction from the president. And I was in Kenya. So the discussion mostly we were having with people is that this is a test of first, to what extent can we embrace a constitution, a strong constitution? To what extent can we embrace independent institutions? And it was a painful pill, for example, for the incumbent in Kenya to take. And it showed that given an opportunity, so many of those politicians will destroy the so-called powerful constitutions and independent institutions.
Right.
But Kenya kind of somewhat held together, but still it is going through a major test now because we still are yet to see an independent electoral commission in Kenya, and that is the root of all the problems we are seeing today in Kenya. The court, the Supreme Court has proved that it can possibly be an independent institution. But the Kenyan constitution is being tested.
Suleiman, briefly on Kenya.
Kenya, remember, it is the biggest economy in East Africa, and most of the countries are relying on Kenya. Thank God the leadership and the people of Kenya are trying to hold themselves together. They are under immense pressure. They are under immense stress. There are a lot of challenges. It is a high time that they deal with the skeletons which have been piling in the cupboard. They are trying to pull them out one by one. It is a very painful process, but we hope that they will go through them. It will hope that they will rise above all the their differences and try to hold the country together. As my brother said, for the time being, it is still holding, but a lot of challenges ahead. And it's up to the leadership to know that a strong Kenya is not only good for the people of Kenya, but is good for the whole of East Africa.
I see. As we wind down towards the end of the year, two events happened. Liberia elected a president, first time their peaceful change of power. And South Africa, our big brother in the South, the party elected a new person, Ramaphosa, to replace Zuma. There are even rumors that Ramaphosa may fire Zuma, like Zuma style, because Zuma did the same to Mbeki. Briefly, we have about a minute left.
Quickly, I would say this. First, I think Liberia, for me, was a wonderful development there, an election of a guy who is just an ordinary fellow, of course, former big soccer star. I was, in a way, delighted that the people didn't fall for the so-called experience and education in their vice president, Boakai, because in many African countries, the so-called experience and education has not brought any amazing thing. So we just hope that this year, this gentleman can have the goodwill of the people and be determined to bring changes that will be beneficial to his people, regardless of not having had experience. People try to use the experience thing against Mr. Obama, right, in this country. Going down south, well, another great development there, I think, because populism, I think, kind of was downplayed there. The Zuma effect, I think, was diminished. And I think that is a positive development.
I see. Suleiman?
Yeah, Nigeria, Liberia is a plus. Like my brother has said, nothing much to add on, but we pray for them and wish them the best of luck. It is a good example on the continent, and they are giving us a good picture on the continent as such. Down south, before I even come here home in South Africa, we also have to appreciate the good and well systematic change of leadership that is coming in Botswana. Well organized, very smooth, very calm, a very good example for the continent. As far as South Africa is concerned, it is the growth of democracy. Democracy in the country, all institutions are being tested. And what happened is the growth of democracy, even within the political parties. We are seeing democracy growing in South Africa, and we hope even the continent will be learning from them.
I see. Briefly, there's still about a minute left. Mm. The Botswana case is a bit unique. What water do they drink? Because for them, they have been right up there in as far as the governance is concerned.
I always say one thing. Look at any great country, any country that has emerged to be very successful, it's all about leadership. Mm. If they're great leaders, they set a precedent. And that is what happened in Botswana with the credit given to people like Mohai. They set the precedent, and every person coming after them will hold on to that standard. So shame on those other African leaders who have refused to create a model that can be followed by others.
Yes, Suleiman?
Remember, it is General Kama who stood firm from 2008 to say Mugabe should resign. He would not miss his words. He wanted the change in Zimbabwe. He gave all the... So the good leadership was not only shown in Botswana itself, but he was trying to even rub it around the region. He has that courage. He has that confidence. It shows you that when you have got good leadership in one country like Botswana, it can be able even to influence other neighboring countries. And eventually we shall be able to get good leadership. Otherwise, Douglas, I think our young men are tired of dying in Europe. Recently, as you saw, they are being sold like slaves in Libya. So I think the leadership in Africa need to wake up, and we start getting leaders like the Barrow in Gambia, not only young, but very enthusiastic CEO type who know what to do. As my brother said, running a country like a profitable organization so that our people can get benefits, not to keep our people in poverty. Look at Museveni. He gave us a New Year's speech which was full of lies. A whole president lying his own people. I mean, such people need to be discarded on the continent.
But the nation had to listen, by force.
He listened, but he is listening to lies. Everything he's talking is the opposite of what is happening in the country. If you could see the way people have reacted, people are so bitter. When a real leader, when someone called the president for 30 years, starts telling people lies and starts saying that it is a very good achievement for what? For the members of parliament to amend the constitution and declare him a life president. And he sees it as a positive aspect for his own country. And he starts projecting economic progress, which is not there when people are dying in poverty. And so many other things which he talked about.
What was even saddening that somebody talked about the slavery in Libya. Many African leaders were mute. None of them raised their voice. They didn't seem to be bothered at all. Well, gentlemen, we're out of time. That will be a topic for another day. That rounds up this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, my colleague, Vincent Makori, host of Africa 54, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst based in South Africa. Our producer tonight was Jackson Mvunganyi. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that in case you missed any or part of this program, you can still access it by going to our main website at www.wenews.com. You can also drop us a line. Our email is reporters@wenews.com. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Douglas Impuga in Washington, wishing you all the best.
What's up, Africa? I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We'd love to have you on board. This is Upfront on The Voice of America.
Listen, let's be upfront.
There's a lot to talk about.
We need to discuss what's going on in your communities, issues that affect you.
Are you involved?
Are you engaged in transforming your society?
Today, right now, this is your platform.
Let us know what you've been up to.
Check us out on Facebook. Drop us a line.
Upfront is a show where we look at issues that affect Africa's youth.
giving you an opportunity to express yourself as you connect with other youth around the continent.
In this interconnected world, we share a destiny. So let us share our solutions to issues like unemployment,
education reform,
elections,
free speech,
and many
other. Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after this.